This is what's happening now from around the fight world. Time for the Fight Network Radio Knockout News Recap.
Welcome back to Fight Network Radio. John Pollock here with your Knockout News Recap. Well, over the weekend, if you missed the WBA heavyweight title defense of Nikolai Volyev against Evander Holyfield, consider yourself lucky. Terrible, terrible fight. Volyev taking the retaining the championship with a majority decision on scores of 116-112, 115-114, and one judge who had it 114 apiece. Chuck Liddell did a radio interview over the week stating that he has asked the UFC to fight Chuck Liddell at the March UFC 96 show that's set for March the 6th. No confirmation, obviously, on that fight as of yet, but that is who Liddell is gunning for. And tonight, the WWE is in Toronto, Ontario, where they will be taping Raw and SmackDown. It's the start of their miniature tournament. You're going to see JBL against Rey Mysterio, CM Punk and Chris Jericho, Randy Orton, Batista, and Kane against Shawn Michaels. The four winners will then collide in a fatal four-way next week in Manchester, New Hampshire, and the winner of that is going to be taking on John Cena at the Royal Rumble next month. I explained it much more easier than Stephanie McMahon did last week. For all your combat sports news, go check out thefightnetwork.com.
It's the final.
It is the final countdown of 2008. The final countdown of 2008. And how else to ring out the 2008 calendar year here with the open calls than with our good pal Ariel Helwani, the John Pollock approved MVP of Fight Network Radio for 2008. Coming back for segment two. Ariel, you're still with us?
Yo,
Mauro Ranallo, actually, in Van City. He got detained Friday, 5 hours at the airport on his way home, but he has landed in Vancouver. And,
I thought you meant he got arrested.
That's usually on the flight when he has some air rage in there, but there were no bouts of that, thankfully. So Mauro Ranallo hopefully going to return safely to Toronto this weekend. But Ariel, very, very busy year in specifically mixed martial arts, and let's start there. We're going to try and go through some of the hot button topics of the year, and if you want to chime in, give us a call, 1-888-9-HARDCORE, 1-888-942-7326. For me, the biggest story of the year was really watching the progression of Brock Lesnar, not just inside of the octagon, but becoming the biggest draw in mixed martial arts, over 2 million buys over three shows this year, a phenomenal crossover, lots of critics of his going into mixed martial arts. What were your thoughts on Brock Lesnar this year, especially in the last 12 months in mixed martial arts?
Brock Lesnar, to me, is the best gift any combat sports god could give to someone like myself and yourself. I mean, this guy, he really has it all. And I'm not just talking about MMA. I'm talking about combat sports. I'm talking about boxing. Anyone who saw that Evander Holyfield fight on Saturday knows that the sport of boxing is a little bit in trouble when it comes to heavyweights. And here we got this guy with an incredible amount of charisma, with a background in the world of amateur wrestling. So he's not just some, you know, bum off the street. And if you look at his record, that might deceive you. And then on top of all that, he's got this pro wrestling background. So he's bringing in a bunch of new fans who clearly helped make him go over that 2 million mark in terms of pay-per-view buys. And then on top of it, he actually wins. And he's not just winning against, you know, the Anthony Hardonks of the world. The UFC has done everything in their capability to actually make Brock Lesnar a failure. I mean, they put him up against Frank Mir, former heavyweight champ. They were going to put him up against Mark Coleman. That, you know, obviously failed due to the injury to Coleman, but goes up against Heath Herring, a definitely legit heavyweight, and then Randy Couture. And they rolled the dice, and I tip my cap to Joe Silva, Dana White, everyone at Duva. They rolled the dice, and wow, has it paid off, and it's going to continue to pay off. I mean, Lesnar has done everything. Have you ever seen a guy that looked better in defeat than he would have probably in victory? I mean, he looked amazing after the Frank Mir fight and the way he dealt with it all, and it's just been an incredible ride for him. And I love the fact that he's actually showing more charisma and, you know, more personality than he actually did as a WWE wrestler. I'm sure you remember. He was pretty poor on the mic. They had to put him with Paul Heyman. And now to see him transform into this MMA star and have him actually hold that UFC heavyweight title, for someone like me, and I'm sure for someone like yourself, a guy who remembers when he debuted in the WWE, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, it's almost surreal. So it just makes me so exciting. It's almost like the world's colliding, as George Costanza once said. So I'm all for the Brock Lesnar experience.
And Brock Lesnar making his on-screen debut for the WWE in your old stomping grounds of Montreal, if I'm not mistaken.
I was there live in attendance. It was a hardcore match following WrestleMania 18.
Which I was at.
You were at?
How about that? That was in Toronto.
I was there as well. So
you were at the Sky Dome for that show?
I was hardcore, man. I went, and back in those days, I went to anywhere I could in the, you know, in the 500-kilometer radius.
That's solid, man. We were both at a wrestling event together.
At a wrestling event. We didn't even know it. It's an unbelievable thing. But, yeah, no, I was there at the Bell Center. Obviously, that show was very memorable due to the ovation that the Montreal fans, who are known to give big standing ovations, they gave it to Hulk Hogan on that particular night. But the hardcore fight, the hardcore match, when Lesnar came through the crowd with Paul Heyman, and I believe he gave like three straight power bombs to Spike Dudley, who's like one of the best guys to ever take a power bomb to get another guy over, the guy giving the power bomb. So it was very memorable, and I sort of felt a connection with Brock from that moment because I'd read so much about him through, you know, Dave Meltzer's newsletter and OVW, and then I finally got to see him for the first time, and the rest is history, as they say.
Is it amazing that as we look back 12 months ago, Ariel, at the state of the UFC heavyweight division? I mean, Randy Couture was on his way out the door. Very stagnant-looking division. We were facing an interim title situation where Tim Sylvia and Nogueira would be fighting for it later that year. And now, all of a sudden, fast forward 12 months later, and in terms of storylines, in terms of competitive fights, the heavyweight division, one of the pillars now for the UFC heading into 2009, where they can do a lot of business with those top tier heavyweights, not to mention the guys on the rungs below, the Shane Carwins and the Cain Velasquezes of the world.
It's the most interesting division in the UFC right now for one reason only, and that's the man we've been talking about, Brock Lesnar, because every fight from this point you want to see, can he get better? Is he for real? There's all these questions surrounding him, and plus it's watching a good freak show. It's not watching a Hangman Choi type of freak show. It's watching this guy who's just that much bigger than everyone, that much more superior in terms of athletic ability, and you just want to see what he can do next. So, again, whether it's Frank Mir or Minotauro Nogueira up next for him, I don't care. I'll be there watching it. I can't wait. And then I want to see if guys like Shane Carwin, like you said, if guys like Cain Velasquez, hopefully he'll be sticking around with the UFC. I mean, I want to see if those guys are actually legit fighters, which I 100% believe they are. And then, you know, what happens to Randy Couture at this point? And then what happens to Frank Mir if he loses that fight or if he wins that fight? I mean, he has to kind of travel this new path. I mean, there's a lot of interesting things. And on top of all that, let's not forget, Andrei Arlovsky versus Fedor Emelianenko on January 24th. I think the UFC will be watching that fight very closely. Not so much for Fedor, because I think Andrei has a great chance. And everyone knows that Affliction's future is a little murky at this point. If Andrei wins, and maybe if he even doesn't, I believe he'll be heading back to the UFC soon rather than later. Dana White has said that was one of his biggest mistakes, not resigning Andrei. He comes back into the mix. Wow, you got a lot of interesting possibilities for 09 and beyond.
You bring up Randy Couture, and here's a guy heading into the new year with a ton of question marks surrounding his name. Were you surprised in the way that Randy Couture came back to the UFC, essentially him and Dana White putting up the white flags? It seemed that Randy Couture, this was a losing battle fighting the UFC outside in court, where each day that went longer, it was just another day closer to Randy not being able to fight again. What did you think of the reunion between the UFC and Randy Couture in September?
To be honest, I was actually quite disappointed by it. I gained a lot of respect for Randy for kind of sticking to his guns. I was actually one of the people, I mean, back even in my JerryPark.com days, the lowly JerryPark.com days, I said that I never really agreed with what Randy was doing. I believe you sign a contract, you fulfill it. But nevertheless, he was sticking to his guns and believed that he was being treated unfairly. So, you know, we go through this whole year, and he does the stuff with Affliction, and he's doing the commercial shoots with Fedor, and we keep hearing more stuff that, you know, he always said he'll never say never, but essentially he was saying that he wanted no part of the UFC. And then all of a sudden, one day, whether it was a better contract offered to him, whether it was the fact that he realized finally that he's 45 years old and the clock is ticking quicker now more than ever, that he's going to come back. And after he told us for over a year that the only fight that makes sense for him at this point was a fight against Fedor, he goes on and accepts this fight against Brock Lesnar and loses in pretty dominant fashion. To me, it's hard to really, you know, tip my cap to Randy Couture in 2008. I wasn't very impressed with the way everything was handled. And, you know, now he's back to where he started. I mean, without the heavyweight championship belt, he's just kind of another face in the crowd. Obviously, he's a legend at this point, but he's going back to doing movies. Who knows when we're going to see him back in action? It's a very weird situation, and I really think that the UFC, at the end of the day, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find anyone out there that would say that the UFC didn't come out looking like champions in this case.
It'll be interesting to see how history looks back on that reunion between Couture and the UFC, because one of the big issues coming out of when Randy did file his resignation with the UFC was that discussing fighter pay. And here was a moment that, I mean, for the pro wrestling perspective, you can look back to 86 when Ventura tried to rally the guys around WrestleMania 2 with the U word, union. And it was immediately squashed by Hogan. And that was the one chance, I thought, in professional wrestling that you could have got the union ball rolling. And it was never really a serious endeavor after that point. And looking back here was a guy in Randy Couture that really was one guy that if there was somebody who could try and rally people around putting together a fighters union, I think that really could have been the moment for it. And when he came back to the UFC, that was essentially squashed. And it saddens me when you hear stuff about now with the whole AKA controversy over the video game deal. And I think a lot of these fighters right now, they're enjoying the riches right now of the UFC and how well they're doing right now. This isn't going to last forever. And a lot of these guys signing away these lifetime likeness deals and such for merchandising, I think right now, I think a lot of these fighters are not thinking 15 years in the future right now.
Yeah, you remember that infamous press conference at Extreme Couture?
Yeah.
Randy and Kevin Ioli, that whole thing. And he kept saying, it's not about the money. But essentially, he kept going back to it, and it was about the money. And I really view, going even past Jesse Ventura, I looked at Randy Couture as possible Curt Flood of MMA. And if anyone knows about Curt Flood, I mean, in 70s free agency, he was the guy that ushered that in Major League Baseball, former St. Louis Cardinal, and he had that opportunity, and he's so well respected in the sport of MMA, and he kept saying it wasn't about the money, it was about the guys 10 years from now, it's the guys at my gym who are doing everything and only getting paid $5,000. And at the end of the day, he came back for more money. That was it. And they gave him more money, and he was happy. And even the thing that bothers me the most is that he kept saying that the only fight that matters to him is a fight against Fedor. That's the only fight that he can sort of test himself. And really, like, you know, a fight against Nogueira, that's not good enough. I mean, I have Nogueira in my little, you know, fake rankings. I have Nogueira ranked over Randy this whole time. I mean, who is Randy Couture after this guy, you know, after beating Tim Sylvia and Gabriel Gonzaga can all of a sudden start dictating, you know, who he's going to fight, and if he doesn't get that fight, he's going to take his ball and walk home with it, as Stone Cold Steve Austin once did. I mean, it's ridiculous. The whole thing was so ridiculous, and I can't help but admit, in the back of my head, when Lesnar won, I sort of felt like karma was playing out here. I mean, if for a full year, we heard all this stuff, and then all of a sudden, Brock Lesnar with his big 4XLs comes out and just pretty much squashes all that talk. And I'm happy only, not because of Randy Couture going down or anything like that, but I'm happy that we don't have to hear more of this, you know, Fedor talk for 2009, because that was one of the most boring storylines of 08.
No arguments from this side of the microphone. I want to race through a few other topics here. Moving over to boxing, Aaron, I think, well, obviously, the biggest story, the most recent one, is really going into 2009 right now. Manny Pacquiao, I think a lot of pressure is going to be on the Pac-Man right now in 2009 to assume the drawing ability that I think has somewhat been compromised with Oscar De La Hoya. I think a ridiculous standard to be held up to right now. And looking ahead, Manny Pacquiao, Ricky Hatton, looking like they will be fighting in May. What do you see in terms of this being a draw domestically versus internationally?
Well, first off, I haven't been this excited about boxing in a long time, like 3 or 4 years. I think that there are so many interesting matchups to look forward to come 09, and we start things off pretty quickly with Margarito Moseley. And I really think that Pacquiao, with the rub that he got on that 24/7 show, with the rub that he got by defeating De La Hoya so soundly earlier this month, it's going to be huge. And then you take his so loyal fan base, and you put him up against Hatton's loyal fan base, those two guys clashing, wherever that may be, is going to be a huge pay-per-view, juggernaut for May. I hope that at some point we are going to see Floyd Mayweather come back. I'm actually hoping that it will be Mayweather-Pacquiao before the Hatton fight. I think that we pretty much agreed that in the last 2 or 3 years, the two most dominant fighters in boxing have been Pacquiao and Mayweather. It's not like one guy is a heavyweight, the other one's a welterweight. They're both, you know, pretty much around the same weight class. Why not put those two guys together? Obviously, I think Pacquiao wants it. I'm pretty sure that Mayweather is not, you know, he hasn't hung up his gloves 100% at this point, so why not make it happen? But if we have to deal with Pacquiao and Hatton first, I think that will do huge business. Hopefully the winner of that fight, and I believe it will be Pacquiao, will go on to face Mayweather. I don't think it would obviously surpass anything that, you know, De La Hoya or Mayweather did a year and a half ago, but I think it will be huge internationally. Perhaps not, you know, domestically here in North America, but you cannot deny what Hatton has over in the UK and what Pacquiao has over in the Philippines. That could do huge numbers and possibly, you know, the most pay-per-view buys internationally for a fight.
We're going to go to the phones right now. Regular caller Baroni is on the line. Baroni, what do you want to chat about?
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're doing well.
Hey, Pollock, you had a conversation yesterday on your radio show, WLW, with Paul Heyman. He said it. He did basically nailed it on the head. You know, that six-month thing he was talking about?
Oh, with TNA's booking, taking a six-month approach, yes.
Right. Who would you take as those four superstars? I have 10 that you can't make a company around these guys because there's so many guys leaving and so many guys coming in, like AJ Styles is one, Samoa Joe, Matt Morgan, Jay Lethal. He even said a tag team, Robert Roode and Cowboy James, Storms, Beer Money Incorporated, Abyss, Double J, Mick Foley, Homicide and Hernandez, and Booker T. What, who would you build it around, man? You know, there's so many guys coming in and out of that place. They still have Christian on their website like he's not leaving, you know what I mean? And Kurt Angle is rumored to be leaving in September, and he should be in WWE by October, taking a reduced schedule like Shawn Michaels. Like, how would that 6 months approach? Who would carry it? You know what I mean? Because this main event mafia thing is just ridiculous. You know, it's like worse than the NWO. Can't be like the Horsemen. Can't be like Evolution. You know, it's almost as bad as Legacy, and Legacy's pretty bad. Like, what would you, like, it's pretty crappy to be in the wrestling business these days. I don't know if it is. I think everybody just needs all new bookers because everybody's stale.
Right. All right, well, I appreciate the call, Baroni and Harry. I'd like your input here as well. I think with TNA, it's never been a question of talent. I think if you pick the right guys in there, if a Styles, if a Samoa Joe, an Alex Shelley, who I think has been shining of late, you take some of those guys and you take a long-term approach to where you want these guys to be booked, not AJ Styles going after Karen Angle, but in a serious manner. I'm so frustrated with TNA and how they have squandered so much. Like, you hear the list of the talent that this company has.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I am so frustrated with TNA. It's such lazy booking. Oh, yeah, let's take our six biggest names from the last 10 years, put them in a stable together, and totally rip off the NWO. How many times is Vince Russo going to try to rip off the NWO in TNA? Let's not even talk about how many times he tried to do it in WCW. It's very lazy booking at this point. But on the flip side, if you are going to go with that six-month approach, which, by the way, great interview with Paul Heyman, very
Thank
much
you.
Excited. But if you're going to go with that six-month approach, then you got to get guys who have been there from the beginning, and you know that are going to continue to be there with you. You know, contracts are contracts. You can't just have guys leaving. So you sign guys, and I'm sure they have guys signed for longer than 6 months. You know, guys like AJ have been there from the beginning. Samoa Joe, not exactly the beginning, but they've been there long enough. I think Alex Shelley's done a good job. I think guys like Booker T aren't going anywhere at this point. You figure out what you got for the next 6 months and book it. If someone gets injured, which happens all the time, then you rearrange. But none of this flying by the seat of the pants type of thing where, you know, every single episode of Impact, you know, you can just come in and watch, and if you didn't watch for the last 4 weeks, you could pretty much know what happens. And it's pretty much the same stuff over and over again, and you'll throw in a six-man tag here, and now they got Mick Foley in the mix, which I think they're horribly using. They're using Foley horribly at this point. Like, how many figureheads can we have in TNA? We could have a whole show on how bad TNA is. So, obviously, there's a lot of things that could be done to fix that product. The six-month idea is nothing that should be, you know, done for TNA specifically. It should be for any type of promotion, whether it's wrestling, boxing, MMA. If you're building something, you have to have a long-term plan. That's not TNA specific, but they've got a lot of issues, and they seem to be content at this point with, you know, doing their 1.1s and getting 20,000 buys, and good for them. If that's what they're striving for, then, you know, I got better things to worry about.
Ariel, as always, hitting it out of the park. Unfortunately, we're tapping for time here. MMArated.com. Ariel, have a great holiday season. We're going to be chatting with you in the new year. Have a great one.
You too, guys. Take care.
All right. We're going to quickly go. Wei Ting, are you there, my man?
I'm here. Oh, my God. Jeez, we are cutting for time, aren't we?
This is Wei Ting, everyone, who has just leapfrogged the entire Fight Network. He has a special dedicated to himself this coming Thursday night, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Quickly.
Actually, Wednesday night.
Wednesday at 7:30, Christmas
and
Eve.
All week.
With the whole family, you guys can watch Wei Ting quickly in 20 seconds. What are we going to be checking out?
We're going to see a countdown of the best moments in Lil Wayne's history. Lil Wayne is just a segment of me talking to a lot of different non-fight celebrities about their thoughts on fighting, and it's awesome. John Ramdean and Mauro Ranallo are hosting it. Whether they know it or not, they are hosting it, and you should watch it.
It's the weigh-in, the best of, coming up Wednesday night.
No, it's the worst of.
The worst of?
The worst of the weigh-in.
Well, I guess that's going to be up to the viewer, won't it?
I guess it is subjective, yes.
All right. It's Wednesday night, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time on the Fight Network. He's Wei Ting. I'm John Pollock. Thanks, Ariel Helwani, Baroni, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow with Paul Heyman on the show.